Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The once unstoppable U.S. consumer, who had benefited greatly from a deluge of government stimulus checks, a multitude of loan forbearance measures, 0% borrowing costs, and huge increases in their real estate and investment portfolios over the past couple of years, is now living in fear of losing their job and, in a growing percentage of cases, sadly, their home. During the month of July, 59% of Americans said they lived paycheck to paycheck, according to a new Lending Club survey. Breaking down the numbers into cohorts, about 75% of consumers, individual consumers earning less than $50,000, and 63% of those earning between $50,000 and $100,000 per annum are living paycheck to paycheck. That is a large proportion of the population with zero savings, no safety net whatsoever. It isn't any wonder that the two biggest increases in consumer credit both took place this year. $40.2 billion in June, and before that, $47.1 billion in March. New debt taken on. The sad truth is that most Americans are now forced to borrow money in order to meet their expenses. And maybe this is some of the reasons why. It is. Not maybe. Rent prices have soared 12% year over year nationally. And in places like New York City, they're up 40% year over year, a 40% increase for the median one bedroom rent, and have skyrocketed by 46%. Let me say that again, by 46% skyrocketed for a two-bedroom Manhattan cage. This will sadly increase the homeless rate and is the primary reason why the Fed has no choice but to kill inflation. And in order for the Fed to kill inflation, they have to kill the inflation that is extant in the real estate market. Home prices in June were 18% higher than during the same month last year, according to S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller indices. The Fed should not be able to declare victory, be able to rest until that year-over-year number of home price appreciation is closer to zero, much closer to zero, if not zero, than 18%. But now the real estate market is heading into the emergency room. And that's not surprising. It's completely unsurprising because the Fed is attacking the primary bubble, which is equities, real estate, and fixed income. But bubbles never pop gracefully. I mean, they never go the way the Fed wants them to. The Fed wanted to pop up real estate and asset prices by 2% per annum, but they didn't get 2, they got 20. For a long time, they couldn't get 2, they were under 2. Then they got not 2, but 20 very quickly. So the bubble in real estate is popping, and it's popping with pernicious effects. The median listing price in August for a new home dropped to $435,000 from $449,000 in July. The average home sold for less than its list price for the first time in more than 17 months, according to Redfin. Mortgage applications to refinance a home loan fell another 1% for the week, but they were down 83% from the same week 1 year ago. So the practice of going out and getting and new mortgage at a much lower rate and taking some money out of your house and going out on a spending spree and using that lower monthly mortgage principal and interest payment and taking the difference and going out and buying things and going on vacations, that's over. Year over year, it's down 83%. And purchase applications dropped by 23% year over year. It is impossible to have positive GDP growth when the real estate market is contracting this sharply. In addition to all the existing pressures on consumers from inflation, is the painful reverse wealth effect in real estate, equity, and bond prices. And the Fed's QT program, along with it, with its interest rate hikes, are really just getting going. And their insidious effects are just starting to be felt. U.S. second quarter productivity dropped by 4.1% after falling 4.6% in Q1. Those are dramatic numbers. Falling productivity is half of potential GDP growth. So you have labor force growth plus productivity growth equals output, a nation's output, potential output. So the labor force growth is barely growing. Its long-term trajectory is 0.5%. It's a half of 1% and heading lower. And if you add that to falling productivity, which is a subtraction, then you see what we, if this productivity doesn't pick up sharply, potential GDP growth in the United States is zero or negative. Stocks in this environment are very expensive, and there is a safer and higher yielding alternative to equities. You know, it used to be TINA, there is no alternative. But there is a great alternative now. The yield on short-term treasuries is now well over double that of the dividend yield on the S&P 500. The dividend yield in the S&P 500 is 1.6% for stocks compared to 3.5% for a two-year note. So here's the ugly truth. The Fed is hiking rates from 0% in March of this year, that's where they were, to around 4.4% by March of next year. That isn't a gradual rate hiking regime. Raising the Fed funds rate by 400 basis points in the span of 1 year from zero is highly unusual. Actually, raising the Fed funds rate by 400 basis points in the span of 1 year is just highly unusual altogether. And on a rate of change basis from zero, it's the greatest tightening in history, and by a lot. And at the same time, Powell will be burning base money supply, quantitative tightening, at double the pace it tried it during quantitative tightening number one in 2019, which was unsuccessful and ended in disaster and had to be aborted due to dysfunctional markets. This unprecedented attempt to control 40-year high inflation will be done while real GDP growth is basically negative. It'll be a little higher in Q3, but the first half of 2022 was negative, and Q4 is going to be negative too. So you're starting this unbelievable tightening cycle, double the pace of QT, record rate of change on the Fed funds rate hiking. You're starting this when GDP growth is basically non-existent and when the current total market cap of equities as a percentage of GDP is higher than at any other time in history prior to May of 2020. It isn't any wonder why we are in a bear market. To put the numbers on this brutal and still incipient bear market, the scorecard is thus. The NASDAQ is down 24.5% year to date, even after today's bear market bounce, bear market rally. We've seen it before. We will see more again, but the trajectory is down and to the right. NASDAQ is down 24.5% this year. The S&P 500 is down 16.5% year to date. the risk-free asset known as long-term U.S. sovereign bonds, down 26.3% year-to-date. Treasuries are down more than the NASDAQ this year. So that 60-40 portfolio is not working. Gold miners down 24% this year. Now, Penta portfolio strategies down before fees 1.5%. So, you know, we charge 1.5% for assets at 100,000. It's 1.25 for 750 and 1 for over a million. So you could add that to your loss for the year. It's minimal. Again, what is keeping the great outperformance of Penta portfolio strategies from turning from a slightly negative number to one that is substantially positive is that bond portion of the portfolio, which isn't working as of now. Now, it could be different this time around, but every other global recession, which is what we're heading into, has sent waves of money into the US dollar, which is working for us, and into treasuries. However, while the US dollar has surged, sovereign bond prices again, they plunged. We didn't buy them at the start of this year. We bought them in late March and April. So we haven't owned them for that 26% debacle. But the continuance of our holding of our position in the losing position of long duration treasuries is contingent on the reaction to sharply slowing US economic data. The slowdown in economic data should be salient, sharp for the remainder of this year. I mean, throughout all of Q4, October, November, and December, the economic data is going to be ugly. If bond prices do not begin to rally, bond prices up, yields down, at that point, it will probably be the result of the inability of the private sector to absorb $95 billion per month of the Fed's quantitative tightening program. I do not believe that will be the case. Otherwise, I wouldn't own any long-term treasuries. But if it does indeed turn out to be true, then we will sell the long-duration treasury allocation. Now, please note that during QT number one, bond prices began to rally after the first few months of QT began. And if I'm correct, and bond prices rally, and our shorts and our dollar positions continue to work, we should be able to turn a slight loss into a rather significant gain. And most importantly, that gain will be in the context of the continuation of the bloodbath that we are seeing in everything else outside of what I just mentioned, the dollar, cash, short-term treasury. And shorts. I'll leave you with this. If the global recession is going to be marked by rising bond yields instead of falling borrowing costs like they have done in every other bear market, then this bear market in equities will be catastrophic. Catastrophic. If you get plunging economic growth and a crash in bond prices and soaring yields at the same time, then you're talking about a bear market like we have never seen before. Penta portfolio strategies has in the past made money in bull and bear markets, although, of course, that's not a guarantee of future results. In any event, we are prepared for all scenarios.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.